This is Life Rattle. I'm your host, Lori Callis. Tonight on Life Rattle number 1175, we present a new story by Life Rattle writer Donna Kakongi and a Life Rattle classic by Terry Bosch. Our first writer tonight, Donna Kakongi, was born in 1972 in Kitchener, Waterloo, Canada. Her dad, from Uganda, has a PhD in biology and currently delivers newspapers for the Toronto Star and owns residential properties. Her mom, from St. Vincent and the Grenadines, studies psychology and sociology. Kakongi is the firstborn. Her brother Kevin works as an immigration officer and her sister Lisa works as a speech pathologist. Kakongi, the aunt of two nieces, grew up and attended university in Toronto. She studied journalism at the undergraduate and graduate level and currently studies curriculum, teaching, and learning development at the doctoral level. She loves reading and writing, loves teaching, and loves working in the world of education. Donna Kakongi is single, and for now, that helps her to focus on her career. Kakongi's writing has a distinctive voice and rhythm that brings her characters to vibrant life. The story you will hear tonight, Lizard in the Backyard, was showcased at this week's 18th annual Totally Unknown Writers Festival, and it's also included in this year's collection, which is available on the Life Rattle website. Cookies play a central role in both of tonight's stories. In the story you're about to hear, you can taste Aunt Pansy's shortbread treats, and your heart will melt as you get to know this eccentric character. Let's listen now to Lizard in the Backyard, written and read by Donna Kakongi.
Lizard in the Backyard by Donna Kakongi. On the volcanic isle of St. Vincent, my mind flits about like a flirtatious girl's hair. I look out from the porch and see skyscraping palm trees instead of skyscrapers. I see bicycles instead of cars, and I see black people instead of white people. Children walk barefoot on the dirt road, and chickens run loose from their cages. In 1986, I'm far from my home of Toronto. "Happy birthday, Donna," says Granny to me as she shifts her weight on the couch. "Thanks, Granny," I respond, looking at the stewed peas and rice on my plate. My plane ticket to St. Vincent was a 14th birthday gift from my grandmother. I thought it would be pleasant to see her, but now I look forward to the few days left passing. I cannot wait to take in the first glimpse of the CN Tower on my way home. Granny lives in a small bungalow painted in peach. Inside, it smells like codfish. Although it is always sunny outside, in Granny's house, it is dark. On the windows, she has shears and heavy green velour drapes that are usually drawn. When I ask her if she can let in a little light, Granny draws the green drapes open and splashes of luminance come through the shears. Fuzzy. I spend most of my day sitting in the living room, trying to get a clear picture on the small Sears television set given to Granny by my mother. St. Vincent gets its television shows mainly from Barbados, and since I have been in St. Vincent, I've watched the Agatha Christie movie Evil Under the Sun 3 times. "Why don't you go for a walk?" Granny suggests. The idea worries me. I've been here for a week and have gone nowhere by myself. I've gotten only as far out of the house as the porch. I keep having visions of a wild animal attacking. I'm just not used to the heat in St. Vincent. Although Granny's place is hot, it is still better than outside. But the nights are cooler, and the walk would be good for my skinny legs, so I decide to visit Aunt Pansy. She lives just down the road, and it will be my first visit since I have arrived. She funny upstairs, says Granny. Been in hospital with ambulance and everything. I'm going to go see her, I'm interrupted by Granny shoopsing her teeth. I'll be back soon. I hit the brown dirt path. The air is so hot and thick, its heat molests me. I follow the bend in the road and pass in between two houses. I hear singing. The unfamiliar tune sounds like a calypso song. I walk towards the sound, wondering who it can be singing so loudly. The voice sounds young and sweet like a child's. The singing comes from the other side of a rickety brown fence that looks like it was put up with scrap pieces of wood. I avoid climbing the fence because it looks like it will fall down. I walk along it, ducking my head to avoid the low-hanging leaves of a tree. I find the hole in the fence and look through. Jump up, jump up! Aunt Pansy jumps as she sings. She has a broom tucked to her chest as her shoulders wiggle. You got to shake to the beat. Shake it, shake it. Every time she says shake it, she grasps the broom with one hand and shakes it so hard the wood handle looks like rubber. I crawl through the hole in the fence and feel something scurry down my back. I jump up and shake, trying to whip off whatever crawls on my spine. I turn around, barrel back through the hole in the fence and fall. The thing has now crawled underneath my dress. I roll around on the grass, desperately grasp at my back and try to catch the thing. Hold on, I hear. I keep rolling, unable to keep still while the thing keeps crawling. I tell you, I can't kill the thing if you don't stop move. I dig my fingers into the grass and hold still as I can. Hurry, I say. Get on your belly. I roll onto my stomach, trying to keep my face away from the grass. Its smell offends me. I can feel the dirt in my nails. A foot hits my back in the spot where the creature is. Then I feel nothing. Is it off? Yeah. I spring to my feet, then watch Aunt Pansy go after what was crawling on my back. I walk behind her, watching her stalk the little animal as it scurries through the grass. She holds the broom in the air, towering over the animal. I see it as a lizard. I shudder. The lizard comes out of the grass and runs across the concrete towards Aunt Pansy's back door. She brings her broom down on top of the lizard. She hits it and I turn away, not wanting to see its destruction. I hear three thumps, then silence. He's dead, Aunt Pansy says. She bends down and picks something up. You want the tail? She dangles a little green piece of lizard flesh in my face. I take a step back quick. No. Aunt Pansy shakes her head. The tail grows back, you know. The lizard is lucky. He lose and get back. I look at the squished lizard on Aunt Pansy's concrete, thinking there will be no tail growing back on this one. Aunt Pansy eyes the tail, looks at me, then brings the tail to her mouth. She licks it. I think this will be sweet in me soup. My stomach feels queasy. There's a funny taste in my throat. You look sick, child. I tell you joke, me a joke with ya. I look at her and notice that she wears blue eyeshadow and fake Halloween-looking eyelashes. Bright red blush touches her hairline just above her ears, and strong fuchsia lipstick runs outside the natural lines on both corners of her lips. Underneath all of that is my Aunt Pansy. Her gray hair streaked with black is twisted on her head. I try to smile at her jokes, still feeling sick and unable to let go of my stomach. I've got ease for your belly. She turns and walks to her back door. Come. I hesitate. Aunt Pansy walks to the back door and looks over her shoulder. I stay standing in the same place. She goes to the door, disappears inside, but leaves the door open. Can it be true that she worships the devil? Granny said that is why she is funny upstairs. I peer through her door. I want to see inside. It is getting dark. The sky is red and purple. I cannot stay long anyway. The first thing that hits me about the house is the smell. Shortbread cookies, my favorite. It is saner than codfish. The only light in the room comes from pale yellow lights on an artificial Christmas tree held up in the corner by red metal poles. The tree is decorated with silver apples and red bells that look like they are made out of wrinkled paper. An angel with a black face sits on the top of the tree. The house is small. From where I stand at the door, I can see the whole place except for what is down the hallway. The floors, made of dirty brown wood, look dusty. Her living room has a fancy sofa with the plastic still on. A small coffee table has picture frames all over it, some in gold and some in silver. From the door, I cannot see the pictures in the frames. Aunt Pansy is at the dining room table. I was baking before I make shortbread cookies. Once I done these, they'll be in the oven and baked in no time. You'll have some. No, that's okay, I say. They'll make your belly feel nice, she says, kneading the dough. You're too thin anyways. You'll have some Pansy cookies and feel nice. Your granny's cooking can't be good. Aunt Pansy stands up, picks up the tray of unbaked, star-shaped cookies and carries them into the kitchen. I look around. Across from a rocking chair sit two large black dolls. They look like brother and sister. The boy doll has short curls and denim overalls. The girl doll has two curly ponytails stuck above her ears and a short-sleeved denim dress. Their eyes look alive. I have to look at them carefully to see that they are glass. Those are my babies, Aunt Pansy says. Just seat them on the sofa. They want to listen to the radio songs. I pick them up and move past a Christmas tree to seat them on the sofa. They're cute, I say. Yes. What are their names? Peas and Rice. I sit in the rocking chair and look at the dolls. Peas and Rice? Yeah, the girl is rice, her favorite thing to eat. I move my eyes away from the dolls and look at the tree. It's pretty, eh? Aunt Pansy asks. Yes, it is. Christmas all year round, I wonder. I like pretty things. I look at my aunt. She's definitely eccentric, but so far I see no signs of devil worship. Them cookies must be done by now. Hold on. Your belly will feel sweet soon. She goes back into the kitchen. A large oak buffet covers the wall beside the dining room table. Inside its glass doors, many crystal glasses and china plates, cups and saucers are showcased. I stand up to look closer. On the middle shelf is a crystal glass with a faded picture taped to its front. A picture of former Prime Minister of Canada, Pierre Elliott Trudeau. Aunt Pansy comes back from the kitchen with a tray of cookies. She places them on the table. You're gonna want some milk to go with the treats, right? I look at the cookies, then at the picture on the glass. Sure, I say, without looking at her. Aunt Pansy goes back into the kitchen. I take my first bite of a cookie as Aunt Pansy places a tall glass of milk in front of me. My teeth sink into the shortbread and chew the treat. I try to keep the taste on my tongue as long as possible. I realize after my fifth cookie that Aunt Pansy has her large bottom hanging off the edge of her seat as she watches me eat. You like them? I nod. Best thing I've ever had. Aunt Pansy smiles wide, exposing that she has two bottom right side teeth missing. Have plenty, I make plenty. I look up and notice the picture in the case again. Aunt Pansy, why do you have a picture of Prime Minister Trudeau? Aunt Pansy spins her head to look, then turns her head quickly back to me. My friend Annie sent me that picture when she first gone to Canada in 1966. Vincentians in Canada speak well of Trudeau and the Liberals. I keep it to remind me how good I got it. What do you mean? Before he came minister, Canada didn't let in lots of black people. Liberals like black people. Now plenty of Vincentians left this place and went to Canada. Your mama went there because Trudeau let her in. So did Natalie. So did Jensen. She starts kneading the dough again, and I notice she is sniffling. I lost all of my loves to that place. You don't like Canada, Aunt Pansy? I hate it. How could you say that? I'm confused. Have you ever been to Canada? Just once. That was in 1967 to visit Annie. I missed her. She lived in Montreal in a pretty place. She even had a car after only 1 year. But that place was so cold. I can't get the chill out of me bones. It changed me for life. I never been the same. Anyways, I wish everybody was still here, Pansy says. Things were good when I could walk to any of my family's house. When you needed comfort, all you had to do was knock on a door and somebody be there to love you. But my mother wants you to live with her, Aunt Pansy. She would be there for you. You don't need to be alone here. Aunt Pansy stops kneading the dough and just looks at me. But this is my place, Donna. I can't breathe any other air or live in any other place but here. If I left, I'd be as unhappy as everybody else. I don't have a car here, but you ask your mama if having a car makes her happy. I finish my 9th cookie, then look at my watch. It is 8:30. I won't have time to eat all these cookies, Aunt Pansy. I should head back to Granny's. Aunt Pansy walks into the kitchen and comes back with a bag. She fills the bag with cookies. Donna, I've something to ask you. I nod for her to continue. Do you think I'm crazy, Aunt Pansy asks. I don't think you're crazy, Aunt Pansy. She smiles. Good.
That was Donna Kakongi reading her story, Lizard in the Backyard. Tonight's second reader, Terry Bosch, was born in Toronto in 1965, the second of 4 children. The family moved to Ottawa when Terry was 2. 9 years later, her family moved to Schomberg, a farming community north of Toronto, where they stayed for 6 years before moving to Ridgetown, a small town near Chatham. Bosch went to Royal Military College at Kingston for a year when she was 19, then traveled around Europe and the Middle East for a year with a cousin. She returned to Ridgetown and worked in a home for ex-psychiatric patients to save money for university. Bosch studied landscape architecture at Guelph University for a year and a half before marrying and moving to Germany for 4 years. During this time in Europe, the couple moved around a lot. They had 2 children born in England. The family returned to Canada in 1993 and settled in Mississauga. Terry Bosch returned to university that year to study philosophy and professional writing. In the story you will hear tonight, Terry Bosch brings us not only a different kind of cookie, but a brilliant portrait of her grandmother. Now let's listen to Freshly Baked Chocolate Chip Cookies, written and read by Terry Bosch.
Freshly Baked Chocolate Chip Cookies by Terry Bodes. Mum knew how much Grandma objected to freshly baked chocolate chip cookies and other frivolous pleasures in life. Mum's timing was off when she removed a batch of cookies from the oven, just as Grandma burst through the screen door of the old farmhouse. Grandma scolded. "Why you make it your family sick? You feeded them garbage, and you make it them garbage." Grandma gestured toward Todd, my 5-year-old brother, and Tanya, my 7-year-old sister. "What else you can expect?" Grandma's face shone with the Vaseline she applied to her face and hands every morning. Grandma checked on us every morning and every afternoon on her way to feed her chickens, her beloved chickens, who ran free on the farm, who shit all over the farm, and who made us regret running barefoot on the farm. Our house stood between Grandma's house and the barnyard on her farm. Our house had a long rickety porch made from cheap lumber that twisted and had aged to a dirty gray. Peeling pillars that had once been painted white supported an awning above the porch. Thick gray tar paper, printed with a pattern of bricks, covered the exterior of the house. Grandma shuffled into the summer kitchen, her compact body draped in garments she had sewn from the discarded clothing of her Polish friends. Grandma bent over and placed two pails on the floor beside the cast-iron stove, one pail galvanized steel, the other enameled steel, both full of kitchen refuse for the chickens to eat. Mum called the chicken food slop, for the way it slopped around in the pail swinging and creaking back and forth on their metal handles as Grandma lumbered toward the chicken coop. Grandma glared at the tray of cookies on the table before her as she settled herself at the end of a pine bench and removed a bulging black bag from the pocket of her coat. My older brother Tim and I were in Toronto with our cousins for the day, so Mum couldn't rely on us to babysit Tania and Todd while she did her weekly volunteer shift for telecare. Mum left instructions with Grandma that Tania and Todd should be allowed 2 chocolate chip cookies each once the cookies cooled. The 2 cookie limit ensured we didn't gobble down Mum baking as fast as she could make it. Mum left Grandma in charge and drove down the dusty lane toward Newmarket. Tania and Todd wanted their cookies. They asked Grandma. "No, you not have it, those cookies. Your mother give it you poison. Here, you try this instead." She pulled a bottle of cod liver oil from her bag. "It will give it you beautiful skin and long life. You eat it this every day, and you live to be 100. Tania turned her back on Grandma. "I want those cookies," she quietly told Todd. "It's not fair," Todd whispered. "I'll go downstairs and pretend I'm hurt, and when she comes down, you lock the door. I'll go out the other side and lock that door." Tania's plan worked. Grandma stood in darkness, beating the door with her fists. "Pigs! You two like dirty pigs in field. You let Grandma out of here." Tania smiled a little uncertainly and sunk her teeth into a cookie, still warm and goopy from the oven. Tania and Todd planned to keep Grandma locked in the basement for as long as it took them to eat 2 chocolate chip cookies each. "Your mummy bad. She bad. She give it you poison. She make it you sick. You Jezebel's children." Todd reached out his scrawny hand for a second cookie and twisted it off the baking tray. "You gonna get fat. You already fat. You gonna get fatter." Tania and Todd looked at each other and smiled before stuffing in more cookies. They had passed their 2 cookie quota. "You stupid boy, not like cousin Christopher. He's smart. Why I not have it smart grandson like him?" Tania and Todd knew they had to release Grandma and relinquish their power once they finished eating. 2½ dozen cookies remained on the tray to help them postpone the inevitable. "Why your mum and dad have it 2 stupid children like you? They have it King's family before you. Now they have it 2 stupid pigs who lock it Grandma in basement." When the time came to release Grandma, Tania quietly unlatched the door, then ran with Todd into the old maple tree between Grandma's house and ours. Grandma appeared at the door. Unable to reach them in their refuge, she yelled, "You eat it all those cookies? Those cookies poison. Now you gonna die." Tania and Todd anticipated Mum's return, and even worse, Dad's return. They couldn't hide what they had done. Dad's reaction was worse than they had expected. First his face clouded over, then he turned around and began to shake. His shaking became violent and uncontrolled. Mum took one look at his face and sent Tania and Todd upstairs. They had never seen their dad that angry before. A dreadful punishment was sure to follow. After putting them through a half hour of torture, Dad finally came up. He seated Tania and Todd beside each other on Tania's bed. Dad sat across from them on Todd's bed, 4 feet away. Dad spoke. "You've never been taught to behave that way. We've got no control over what Grandma does, but you certainly can control what you do." Todd looked at his hands, twisting the lower edge of his t-shirt. Dad spoke louder. "Young man, you look at me when I speak to you. Todd forced his eyes to meet Dad's eyes. Dad continued, "What Grandma did wasn't right, but what you did wasn't right either. So I want you to think about how you should have handled this situation, and we'll talk about it tomorrow." Tanya and Todd agreed to think about a better way, and Dad left the room. Tanya and Todd stared at each other, stunned that Dad hadn't spanked them. They had done one of the worst things in their lives that afternoon. It had been a great insult to Dad, who protected his mother. 17 years later, Todd wrote the tribute to the bride for Tanya's wedding. Todd considered working the trap and binge episode into his speech, but Tanya objected. She felt it had been a bit too serious for Dad. Mum laughed when she overheard in the next room. She joined Tanya and Todd in the kitchen. "Are you serious? Your dad thought it was so funny he had to turn away from you so you wouldn't see him laughing." Tanya froze and looked at Mum. Todd's mouth hung open. "You don't think you'd have gotten off so easily if Dad had been really angry, do you?" Todd mentioned the incident in his speech, and the episode became part of our family folklore.
That was Terry Bosch reading her story, Freshly Baked Chocolate Chip Cookies. That concludes Life Rattle number 1175. My name is Lori Callis. Life Rattle will bring you more new stories next Sunday night at 9 o'clock. Life Rattle was created by Guy Allen and Arnie Achtman.